Today, property bust on the cards. A market update for the 25th of September 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we cover off the latest market movements, China's continued campaign against Bitcoin and other cryptos, the deafening silence from Evergrande, and the IMF's musings on Australian property. Things are getting interesting indeed, and much hinges on the property sector here and overseas, where leverage is to the max. First, for all the turmoil in global markets earlier in the week, stocks managed to stay in the green on Friday, as traders shrugged off concerns over a Federal Reserve pullback in stimulus, contagion risks from distressed developer China Evergrande Group, and Beijing's latest crackdown on cryptocurrencies. The S&P 500 staged a late-day rally, extending its weekly advance, with energy and financial companies among the biggest gainers. At the end of the day, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 have risen 0.5% and 0.3% respectively for the week. The Nasdaq Composite also gained 0.06% for the same period, but Bitcoin slid about 5.5%, with crypto-related stocks like Riot Blockchain and Marathon Digital Holdings also tumbling. The Nasdaq Golden Dragon China Index, which tracks some of the Asian nation's biggest firms listed in the US, sank as much as 3.6%. This week promised to be lively, and it didn't disappoint, wrote Craig Elram, senior market analyst at Onda. Buy the dip is alive and well, it seems, because the end result is that Evergrande remains at risk. Central banks will soon be tightening and are increasingly concerned that inflation may not quite be as transitory as previously thought. And in another blow to investor sentiment, the world's second largest economy said crypto-related transactions will now be considered illicit financial activity, as China's central bank announced that all transactions of cryptocurrencies are illegal, effectively banning digital tokens such as Bitcoin. Virtual currency-related business activities are illegal financial activities, the People's Bank of China said, warning it seriously endangers the safety of people's assets. It's the latest in China's national crackdown on what it sees as a volatile speculative investment at best and, frankly, a way to launder money at worst. There is history here, of course. Trading cryptocurrencies has officially been banned in China since 2019, but has continued online through foreign exchanges. However, there has been a significant crackdown this year. In May, Chinese state institutions warned buyers they would have no protection for continuing to trade Bitcoin and other currencies online, as government officials vowed to increase pressure on the industry. In June, it told banks and payment platforms to stop facilitating transactions and issued bans on mining the currencies, the trade using powerful computers to make new coin. But Friday's announcement is the clearest indication yet that China wants to shut down cryptocurrency trading in all forms. Bitcoin was down 4.5% to 42,849, and Ethereum dropped 5.9% as I write this. And while there are probably still Chinese onshore speculators, activity has already shifted out of the country over the years and amid increasingly stringent regulations, said Clara Medlier, the research lead at data provider Cato. More broadly, traders remained on guard for what Chinese regulators may target next, as the government also tightened its grip on sectors ranging from private education to digital gaming, e-cigarettes, property and insurance. And of course, they are pushing ahead with their own central bank digital currency, which of course is part of the central control plan. And talking of traders, they pulled 28.6 billion US dollars from US equity funds in the week through to September the 22nd. That's the most since February 2018, according to a Bank of America note. Even after the massive outflows from equities, though, the BOA private clients remained heavily exposed to stocks, with about 65% of assets under management invested in that asset class. The US economy has met the Fed's conditions for starting to reduce its asset purchases soon, according to two regional Fed bank presidents. I support starting to dial back our purchases in November and concluding them over the first half of next year, Fed Bank of Cleveland President Loretta Mester noted. And separately, her Kansas City counterpart Esther George said the criteria for substantial further progress has been met, referring to the central bank's taper test. Elsewhere, shares in Nike fell 6.2% after it also warned of delays during the holiday season, blaming the supply chain crunch. That was the biggest drag on the S&P 500 on Friday, in fact. Still, some on Wall Street believe the slump in Nike is a buying opportunity. We expect supply chain issues to prove transitory and recommend clients using any related near-term share price weakness as a buying opportunity, Oppenheimer said in the note. Investors have been cheering the Fed Reserve's decision of not making any immediate move to taper the bond purchasing program and to keep the benchmark interest rate unchanged. In this regard, Charlie Ripley, a senior investment strategist for Alliance Investment Management, said that uncertainty has been building around the path of the economy and the Fed instilled some confidence into markets yesterday. In addition, other risks that have been weighing on investor sentiment, like the debt ceiling and risks associated with China's real estate market, appear to be fading, which have dialed up investors' appetite for risk. To which I reply, if you don't see the risk in China's real estate, you're not looking very hard. The latest US retail sales data was pleasantly surprising. The metric inched up 0.7% sequentially in August, against the market expectation of a 0.8% decline. Online retail sales rose 5.3% last month after dipping 4.6% in July. There was an increase in the sales at clothing stores as well as the building materials and furniture in the previous month. Encouragingly, the core retail sales rebounded 2.5% in August from a downward revision of 1.9% in July. The metric highlights that spending component of the GDP is alive and well. The US consumer sentiment also marginally improved, despite the heightening concerns about the surging coronavirus cases and the rising inflation levels. The University of Michigan's preliminary consumer sentiment inched up to 71 in September from 70.3 last month, and the latest ISM Manufacturing Purchases Managers Index for the United States painted a rosy picture for the industrial sector. The metric rose to 59.9 in August from 59.5 in July and surpassed forecasts of 58.6. Any reading above 50% indicates an expansion in US manufacturing activities, and notably the manufacturing sector, which makes up 11.9% of the US economy, saw the reading expanding for the 15th consecutive month. Investors are still in love with growth equity, said Rick Meckler, partner at Cherry Lane Investments. That's a family investment office in New Jersey. There's fear among institutional investors that higher interest rates will depress the growth equity multiple. But retail investors just love their growth equities, the ones they know and whose earnings remain strong. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.1% to 34,798. The S&P 500 gained 0.15% to 4,455, and the Nasdaq Composite dropped 0.03% to 15,047. It's been a very volatile week, to say the least. So I think going into the last week of September, the volatility is likely to continue, especially with the end of the quarter window dressing, said Peter Cardio, chief market economist at Spartan Capital Securities in New York. And investors are also looking for signs of progress on President Joe Biden's spending and budget bills. Cyclical sectors are back in demand as investors renewed bets on the reflation trade, stocks that move in tandem with economic growth, inflation and treasury yields. Following a climb in treasury yields, the 10-year yield rose to 1.45% for the first time since early July. The reflation trade is reflating as 10-year yields break through some initial resistance, said Mark Lushi, chief investment strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Small caps, value stocks and banks and financials continue to be powered by a strong correlation to trends on the treasuries. Rising yields, supported by expectations of tighter Federal Reserve monetary policy, have steadied fears about the economy at a time when concerns about Chinese real estate developer Evergrande continues to linger. Evergrande was due to make $84 million in coupon payments on Thursday, but bondholders are still waiting on it. Focus on the 10-year treasury. That's a key indicator of a global economy that's doing well, Darren Schringer, CEO of Asymmetric ETFs, said. Longer term, we need strengthening global GDP growth, though, to sustain the rally in equities. The volatility index was down 4.72% to 1775. The euro US dollar was down 0.14% to 1.1720, while the US dollar index was up 0.27% to 93.27. Crude oil for delivery in November rose 0.87% to 73.94. And gold was up 0.03% to 1,750. In fact, for the week, though, it was virtually flat. For those tracking the market, especially the long investors who have repeatedly been burned following optimistic forecasts of the past 9 months, the real weekly comparison perhaps should be against last Wednesday. That was when gold lost 2% in its most since early August. As US bonds spiked and the dollar girded higher as well on speculation of hawkish Federal Reserve action over its economic stimulus and lower for longer interest rates. Gold has been battling against a stronger dollar that stemmed from surging treasury yields post-Fed, said Ed Moyer, analyst at Omda. Gold is in a very tough spot and volatility will remain elevated with the risk remaining to the downside. The US growth story will continue to improve if COVID modelers are right about a steady decline in COVID cases through to March. Moyer added that gold longs could be in further trouble if China's property giant Evergrande, which rocked markets, of course, this week with its growing debt crisis, managed to avert a contagion. If the Evergrande fallout is contained over the weekend, gold could be vulnerable for a test of $1,700. Fed Chair Jay Powell, at the conclusion of the central bank's monthly policy meeting on Wednesday, repeated his mantra that inflation was trending above the Fed's target of 2% per annum due to the higher costs of doing business in a pandemic-constrained economy. The market has consistently shown that it has little faith in the Fed to be able to restrain inflation and sent bond yields to multiple-year highs since the end of 2020 to reflect that. Gold, a non-yielding asset branded as a safe haven, has been the principal victim of yield hikes. In Europe, stocks fell on Friday as worries about that troubled property developer and weak German business confidence data prompted investors to book some profits after a midweek rally. Equities have rallied to take a pause early this morning, faced with likely defaults at Evergrande, said Sebastian Gale, senior macro strategist at Norda Asset Management. Meanwhile, a survey by IFO Institute showed German business morale in September fell for the third straight month, hit by supply chain woes that are causing a bottleneck recession for manufacturers in Europe's largest economy. The German DAX fell 0.72% to 15,531 heading into the weekend, when the country will vote to elect German Chancellor Angela Merkel's successor. Latest polls show the Social Democrats were clinging to a narrow lead over the conservative CDU-CSU alliance, while the Greens trailed. Some of the hesitancy in European markets could also be put down to the German election, which promises to be the most interesting in some time, said Chris Beauchamp, chief market analyst at IG. Markets are facing a change of direction in Germany unlike anything seen in the past decade or more, and the end of Merkel's tenure promises to be a watershed moment for the EU and global investors alike. The benchmark stocks 600 is on course to end September in the red after 7 consecutive months of gains, as rising energy prices and supply chain bottlenecks fed into fears of inflation while major central banks planned to cut pandemic-era stimulus. It was down 0.9% to 463.30. However, European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde said recently that many of the drivers of a recent spike in Eurozone inflation are temporary and could fade in the new year. Well, there you go. It's the old central bank mantra. Nothing to see. Inflation is temporary. It'll go away again. We wonder about that. Stocks and sovereign bond yields climbed on Friday on optimism about the economic outlook, though uncertainty lingers about potential risks from the debt crisis at China Evergrande Group. The Asia-Pacific MSCI index rose for a second day, led by Japan. Shares were muted in Hong Kong and China, where Evergrande has yet to make a statement on a dollar bond interest payment that was due on Thursday. Global market unease about contagion from Evergrande has ebbed, but it remains unclear if Beijing will manage the fallout from any potential default at the world's most indebted developer. The prospect of tighter monetary policy spurred a global sell-off in bonds. Long-term Treasury yields have surged the most in 18 months as traders bought forward expectations for the first Fed rate hike at the end of 2022. Yields jumped on sovereign debt in Australia and New Zealand as well. Equity investors are taking heart from predictions that the Delta virus strain and pandemic-related supply chain snarls will deal only a temporary setback to economic reopening. Central banks have also pledged to withdraw stimulus gradually, but a continuing rise in long-term borrowing costs could be a risk to the upbeat picture if it ends up denting confidence in recovery prospects. While the bond sell-off has vindicated Treasury bears who argue yields are too low to reflect fundamentals, others see limits to how high they can go. We'd expect bond yields to go higher given the macro situation where growth is still very strong, Sylvia Sheng, global multi-asset strategist with JP Morgan, said. But we do stress that it's a modest view because we think the upside to yields is still limited from here, given that central banks, including the Fed, are still buying bonds. China's Shanghai Composite edged down 0.8% to 3,613, although investors did breathe a sigh of relief. The concerns over China's Evergrande's debt woes receded just a little. It still, though, remains unclear if and how the developer will pay the more than $300 billion of liabilities that it owes, and it also remains unclear how authorities will react to any potential default. The developer now has 30 days to settle payment scheduled for yesterday, with more payments due in the days to come. All this confirms what we said yesterday and the day before, that the default risk does loom large. Hong Kong's Hang Seng index fell 1.3%, 24,192, with Evergrande Group stocks down 11.61% to 236. Japan's Nikkei 225 jumped 2.06% after returning from a holiday to 30,248. And the National Core Consumer Price Index, the CPI, grew nothing at all year on year in August. And the national CPI contracted 0.4% year on year and 0.2% month on month, respectively. The data also showed that the Manufacturers Purchasing Managers Index for September was at 51.2. Now, we continue to believe that the Evergrande saga will keep market participants on the edge of their seats. Even if the company starts renegotiating a restructuring agreement with its creditors, anything pointing to such a deal being handled poorly could cause more uncertainty. Therefore, we cannot rule out further setbacks in equity markets in the short term. Of course, the company owes that $305 billion US dollars and it's run short of cash, and investors are worried that a collapse would pose systemic risk to China's financial system and indeed reverberate around the world. The deadline for paying the $83.5 million in bond interest payments passed without any remark from Evergrande, and bond holders have not been paid nor have heard from the company. Now the firm has that 30-day of grace, but it's uncharted waters. It will default if it passes without payment. These are periods of eerie silence, as no one wants to take massive risks at this stage, said Harry Cheung-Wung, head of Asia Fixed Income at Principal Global Investors in Singapore. There's no precedent to this at the size of Evergrande. We have to see in the next 10 days or so, before China goes into holiday, how this is going to play out. China's central bank again injected cash into the banking system on Friday, and that's seen as a signal of support for markets. But authorities have been silent on Evergrande's predicament, and China's state media offered no clues on a rescue package. Evergrande appointed financial advisors and warned of default last week, and world markets fell heavily on Monday last week, of course, amid fears of contagion, though they've since stabilised. The conundrum for policymakers is this: how fiercely can they impose financial discipline without fueling social unrest, since an ugly collapse at Evergrande would crush a property market that accounts for 40% of Chinese household wealth. Protests by disgruntled suppliers, home buyers and investors last week illustrated discontent that could spiral in the event of a default, sparking crises for other developers. Evergrande has promised to prioritise such investors and resolve one coupon payment on the domestic bond this week, but it said nothing about the offshore interest payments that were due on Thursday or the $47.5 billion due next week. Bondholders are starting to think it might be a month or so before things become clearer, and markets have already assumed that they can take a large haircut. Current market pricing estimates that investors in Evergrande's dollar bonds are likely to recover very little, said Jennifer James, a portfolio manager and lead emerging markets analyst at Janus Henderson Investors. The likeliest outcome is that the company will engage with creditors to come up with a restructuring agreement, she said, warning that if such a deal is mismanaged, the loss of confidence could have contagion effects. Global markets have begun to recover after Evergrande's plight sparked a sharp sell-off, trading on the basis that the crisis can be contained. Only some $20 billion of Evergrande's debts are owed offshore, yet the risks at home are considerable because of the risk to China's property sector. That's a vast store of wealth. Housing sales and investments could inevitably slow further. This would knock nearly one percentage point off GDP growth, analysts at Société Générale said. The longer policymakers wait before acting, the higher the hard landing risk. So there have been few signs of official intervention. The People's Bank of China injected 270 billion yuan this week into the markets. That's the largest weekly sum since January, and that helped put a floor under stocks. The Wall Street Journal said, though, citing unnamed officials, that authorities had asked local governments to prepare for Evergrande's downfall. Given the deliberate pace of Chinese policy making, the authorities may well choose to play for time, said Wei-Lang Chang, a macro strategist at DBS Bank in Singapore. But actually, you know, the real issue is not Evergrande itself, but rather the whole property edifice in China. As Zero Hedge put it for Beijing, the real risk is not whether foreign creditors are impacted. In fact, Evergrande's willingness to default on offshore bondholders while preserving operational cash flow and continuing to build homes shows just how much China cares about BlackRock's P&L. But how an Evergrande crisis could impact China's massive $60 trillion property sector, something which the CCB International, the Chinese investment bank, touched on in a recent research note, is significant. The contagion risks has spread from financing to land sales, property sales, project deliveries, and home prices. And indeed, as the FT reported, some very ominous cracks in China's property market, which, according to Goldman, is the largest asset class globally, are starting to emerge. In a letter to the Shandong Municipal Government in eastern Zhejiang, Shanhang province, the local officer of development for Sunac China appealed for policy assistance as it was struggling through what it called a turning point in China's real estate industry. We have never experienced such a radical change in the external environment, they said, pointing to a 60% year-on-year fall in home sales over the summer. The market is almost frozen, it added in the letter, which was first reported by the Financial Times. The radical changes in policy and environment has seriously disrupted our business and made it very difficult to maintain normal operations. The sudden sharp collapse in China's property market is underway. The amount of actual land transactions was not only well below the land supply in recent weeks, an unprecedented divergence, but that volume was 65% below year-ago levels, as potential buyers are suddenly terrified of investing in real estate as the Evergrande fate remains in limbo, with some worried that some of the 65 million empty apartments could hit the market and lead to a crash in property values. This is a big, big deal. Locally, Australian shares retreated this week as the local market grappled with a string of central bank announcements that coincided with a collapse in the iron ore price and, of course, that uncertainty by Evergrande. The ASX 200 dropped 61.6 points or 0.8% over the week after shedding 0.4% to 7,342 on Friday. Despite near-term uncertainties, we remain of the view that the likely continuation of strong global growth and tight monetary policy being a long way off augurs well for shares over the next 12 months, said AMP Capital's chief economist Shane Oliver. The real estate sector was Friday's biggest laggard, though, falling 2.1%. Although iron ore prices remained flat, miners of the bulk commodities struggled, with BHP down 1.7% to $37.72, Fortescue 1.2% down to $15.34, and Mineral Resources down 2.9% to $46.40. Rio Tinto, though, rose 0.5% to $99.33. A 1% fall in the gold price to $1,750 an ounce weighed on miners of the precious metal, like Remulus Resources, down 6.1%, Silver Lake Resources down 5.1%, and Perseus Mining down 5.7%. Slight gains posted by the big banks did help limit the market losses, though. CBA climbed 0.6% to 117. ANZ was up 0.1% to 27.41. National Australia Bank was 1% up to 27.34, and Westpac was 0.7% higher to 25.25. Afterpay Touch was up 0.43% to 132.11. Energy stocks were bought by Brent crude futures, hitting their highest level since 2018, as Woodside Petroleum added 1.7% to 22.17, and Santos climbed 1.9% to 6.61. And finally, the International Monetary Fund has called on Australia to address the rising financial stability risks posed by rocketing house prices, which are expected to increase by up to 20% this year. The IMF also warned that there would be a reckoning for so-called zombie companies once pandemic support were withdrawn, which could result in a spike in corporate insolvencies, particularly in small and medium firms. Australia's consistent lack of large-scale systemic tax reform also needed attention, according to the Global Financial Institution, which said a failure to act on productivity-enhancing reforms would come with a long-term cost. We think the tax reform would help economic efficiency and strengthen Australia's position fiscally over the medium term, but also in terms of economic efficiency by realising gains from having a better system of direct taxation, IMF's Australian Division Chief Harold Finger said. Echoing recommendations from the OECD last week, the IMF called for Australia to reduce the income tax burden on households and businesses, which is higher than the OECD average, by increasing GST revenue and offsetting the regressive effects on low and middle-income households. Not pursuing the reform basically means losing out on the gains that one can have from better incentivising investment, Mr. Finger said. Treasurer Jos Frydenberg last week ruled out any change to the GST. The recommendations came at the conclusion of the IMF's biannual, and this time online, assessment of Australia's economy, which forecast growth of 3.5% by the end of 2021 and 4.1% in 2022. Of note was the IMF's projection that inflation would grow to 2% by the end of 2022 and stay within the Reserve Bank of Australia's target band of 2 to 3%. That was just interest rates could begin to lift by the end of that year, ahead of the RBA's current 2024 forecast, specifically on Australia's booming housing market. Mr. Finger said the IMF's concerns were twofold. First, growing affordability issues, and second, the potential for rising financial vulnerabilities. We think that requires a comprehensive policy response, he said. Macroprudential policy should be tightened to address gradually rising financial stability risks. Possible options include increasing interest serviceability buffers, the stress tests on households for their ability to pay loans with high interest rates, as well as caps on debt-to-income ratios or loan-to-value ratios. And the IMF also called for further supply-side reforms, including more efficient planning, zoning and better infrastructure, in addition to transition from stamp duties to broad-based land taxes, which has long been called for in Australia but has so far only been adopted by the ACT government. On the potential for a spike in business failures when pandemic supports were withdrawn, Mr. Finger said there was a need to balance and support businesses through artificial downturns created by lockdowns, and also the need for the economy to react flexibly and to reallocate resources from less productive firms to more productive firms. Of course, once the recovery starts and sets in, there will have to be that eventual reckoning, and firms that are longer term not viable will need to exit over time, he said, though added, this would occur at a pace that is digestible for the labour market and for the financial system. So the point I want to leave you with today is this. Our economy and the Chinese economy is so highly reliant on the property sector. And if policy settings are incorrect, or indeed if there is a policy misstep, this could bring the whole edifice falling in. The thing I have to say, though, is that both here and in China, they will do a lot more to protect the property sector, I think, at least in the short term. But the more they protect it, the bigger the risk becomes and the bigger the crash later. There is no fundamental way out of this unless you change your strategy. And I've been saying this for many years, but it's clearer now than ever. We do need a different approach to housing. In fact, I made a submission to the current inquiry, and tomorrow I'll take you through that in detail because my submission has now been accepted into that inquiry. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.